This is The Guardian.
Just before we begin, this is a podcast series about stalking, and some people might find parts of it difficult to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In the last episode, Matthew's victims told me about the day they finally faced him in court, and the moment he was handed a 9-year jail sentence, a sentence he plans to appeal. But there's still someone we haven't heard from. A house, surrounded by electric gates and security cameras. Inside, Donna's waiting for us, nervous but friendly.
I went and spoke to Matthew yesterday. I said that you were coming,
yeah.
And normally you phone to me just after 6 o'clock, so I might get interrupted.
Okay.
The first thing Matthew's mum does is make us a cup of tea. There's a small yappy dog racing around the kitchen, gnawing on a chew toy.
Been anxious about meeting us. I know it's quite stressful.
Yeah. Because we're not bad people.
Yeah.
We're really not. We've been through so much. Life's on hold. Press the pause button and that's it. It's just, yeah, it's just living in just a nightmare.
From The Guardian, I'm Shirin Kale and you're listening to Can I Tell You a Secret? Episode 5, A Mother's Love. Donna Hardy lives with her partner in a detached house in a village near Northridge. The images from the CCTV are beamed onto a screen in the corner of the living room. She has the same eyes as Matthew. I'm struck by the resemblance. Tea made. She takes me into the TV room where we set up.
And if there are other people that you think will help us to understand Matthew as well, like friends or former support workers, love to chat.
I don't really know anybody, to be honest, because she was that isolated that he didn't have any friends.
Yeah.
That, and that's the reason why we're probably in the situation that we're in.
There are photos of Matthew laid out on a coffee table.
I mean, how old is he in this photo? Maybe one or two?
Yeah, I would say he was just toddling on that photograph.
And this looks like Matthew when he's a teenager, right?
Actually, that was Matthew when he was probably about 19, 20, 21, 22.
And he's got sunglasses on his head and he's in a tent. So you were obviously on a camping holiday, maybe?
He'd gone to, that was when he had a girlfriend, his one and only girlfriend, and he'd gone to camp and got wet through and then rang up and said, can we put us up in a hotel because we were freezing? But it was quite a big adventure for him to do that, really, because he'd never sort of, you know, it was his first girlfriend and they'd gone away together.
So, how are you doing?
Every day is, well, you just wake up and think, oh, right. It's hard knowing that my son is where he is and there's not a lot I can do about that. He's always needed me. I've always been there for him. I feel like I've abandoned him.
And how is he doing? I know you speak to him on the phone, don't you, almost every day?
Yeah, I do. He has really bad days and it's like a roller coaster. He'll have times when he's been on a slightly even keel and then other days where he's just completely gone to pieces and his anxiety levels are through the roof. Or with him being autistic, everything's just heightened So a slamming of a door, you know, the noises, the sounds, it's just too much for him to take sometimes, just too much.
I've thought about Matthew so much in the months since I started reporting this story. I even had a dream that I visited him in prison and asked him why he did it. And being here in Donna's house, pictures of Matthew in front of me, it feels a little surreal and overwhelming. Like, I have so many questions, I don't even know where to start. Ideally, of course, I'd ask Matthew myself, but he didn't want to record an interview, although he said it was okay if Donna spoke about him. So, if in doubt, I think, start at the beginning.
Yeah, he was a good boy. He was. I never had any problems with him. Like Matthew never had tantrums. He never did. And so we always thought, oh, he was quite a good baby. I remember there used to be this hunchy dumpty, and he used to take him his pushchair and he'd say, oh, da-da-dee. And I'd say, what? And he couldn't say humpty dumpty. And I'd say, oh, I'm going to have to get him that humpty dumpty. But he never actually screamed out for it. Like you see some children that they're fixated on something, they actually want it. And but no, he was just good. He was a good little boy, really.
What was your home life like? Like, what would you do for fun?
Well, we always and he used to go fishing with his dad in the football, because that's his thing, fishing, football, mainly football. But you know, just Christmases with my mum and dad. My mum absolutely adores Matthew, and he adores her. My dad used to say, oh, look, here they are, ebb and flow, he used to call them, you know, because they just used to bounce off one another, and they were just so close.
What was the environment like in which Matthew was living? You know, well, was he close to his dad?
Yeah, Matthew's dad and I got divorced when Matthew was about four or five, just at the time, really, when he would be starting primary school. So that was a bit of an upheaval for him. And his dad used to see him each weekend, and then he'd have him for a couple of nights, one night in the week for tea. He loved being with his dad as well, you know. They were pretty close. It wasn't a problem for us at all until Matthew got to about, I don't know, seven maybe. And his dad was involved in another relationship then, and things started breaking down. The communication between me and his dad wasn't as good as it could have been. His dad had another they had another baby, and it just became a bit awkward about where, you know. Maybe they needed more time together, and Matthew was there every weekend, and it just started, you know, suddenly, you know, quite subtly, because I didn't realise that there was a problem. And his dad told me that he wasn't going to see him. So I said, well, you need to speak to Matthew, because you need to have that explained to him. And
wow, that is really hard thing to say.
Yeah, and he did, and it was just over the phone, and Matthew was just distraught. No, please, no. And yeah, it's quite upsetting. And so that's years before he saw him again.
7 years old, and he's saying to his dad, don't do this, and yeah, his dad is saying, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I can see that it's a hard thing for you to discuss as well, yeah.
That rejection, to me, in looking back now, is maybe had a big in what's happened with him. It took me a while to get my head round how. See, I don't want to say too much about that, because, you know, they might have a different perspective on it, that they're not here to defend themselves.
I've met a number of Matthew's victims, and in some cases, I've spoken to their families. And they're always close. Often Matthew targeted victims from really tight-knit, loving families and tried to break them up. Like when he told Andrea that her mum had been cheating on her dad before she died and he was going to tell him. Or when he told Amber that her dad wasn't her biological dad after all. Or when he tried to break up that couple's wedding day. It's interesting, particularly when you consider that in the 2022 court case, Matthew's defence presented evidence to the judge that his offending stemmed in part from his abandonment issues and history of rejection. So Matthew's dad wasn't in the picture much. Matthew grows up, moves from his small village primary school to a much bigger secondary school. He struggles there. Matthew's autistic, although he doesn't know that at the time. He's not diagnosed until his late teens. Donna just thinks that Matthew's not good at social stuff.
And I look back now and I think how... Because obviously he hadn't got his diagnosis. And, you know, there are children that are more outgoing than others and some that put themselves up front and want to be in charge of everything. And Matthew would just be... A little bit, I would say, not as confident, you know, he'd stand back and, you know, and I would say, go on, have a go, you know. Looking back now, I think there was a difference. There was a difference, but maybe I just didn't see it at the time. And then, you know, it's only just recently that I knew that he was being bullied in school. And I didn't know because... Matthew wasn't going to tell me. Matthew never came home and said to me, I'm having problems at school.
He hid it from you.
Yeah, he did. I think he hid it from me because he may have been too embarrassed to tell me because of what maybe he was being bullied about. Because he was always quite thin, Matthew, tall. He was, when he was a baby, they said, oh, he's going to be tall, you know. So... I think he was always a bit self-conscious about that and the way that he looked. And if anybody said anything to him about it, then, you know, that was it.
How was he being bullied? What have you learned?
See, even now, I don't know the details. I don't know the facts because it'd be an off-the-cuff remark. And then when, you know, you say, what happened? He'd just come up. He just, you know, well, it'd be maybe about the way that he looked. But I honestly didn't know.
Did you ever witness any of the bullying?
I did witness it once. Matthew was, when he got to about 17, his friend had just passed his test in his car, and he said he was going to pick Matthew up along with another friend. And, you know, I said, well, you know, be careful. And he said, I'm going to wait for him at the end of the drive because he'll be here any minute and he's, you know, going to pick me up. And I was just pottering around the house and I saw a car just pull up and Matthew went to get in it and they just drove off. And I was just laughing at him. I thought, why? What has made you do that? And he came back up the drive and I said to him, what happened then? And he said... I don't know. He said, I was just about to get in the car. And I thought, well, maybe he might turn around and come back, you know, just pranking him. And he didn't.
They never came back.
And he didn't react. He didn't get angry. He didn't get upset. He just said, oh, that's he just sort of took it in his stride, and I would say, but that's not right. What he's done there is, that's cruel. What he's just done, and he just went, oh well.
It makes you think that sort of stuff was happening
all the time.
Yeah, quite regularly.
For him to just, yeah.
This bullied schoolboy began spending a lot of his time online.
as he was getting older and he was getting beyond, you know, towards the end of his teenage years, it was just becoming more and more apparent that he was becoming more withdrawn. It was getting, you know, probably to the point where he was finding it less easier to cope with the more social side of the situation, you know. And it was a red flag because the few friends that he did have, when they would say, you know, do you want to come here? Do you want to go? No, I'm not, I can't be, you know, no, I don't want to.
When does he start to retreat into his computer and that online world?
Pretty much from leaving school. Yeah. It was as if that is... I can't be with the real people in the real world, but I can online. At the time, it was all, how many friends can you have?
I remember that, how many friends.
Yeah? Yeah, and it was maybe... That was a little bit of a challenge then for Matthew to get all these friends, but they're not really friends, are they? You know, I think that this is only my opinion because I've had time to think about all this, is that if... Maybe on, you know, when you're online and you're trying to be friends with somebody and then you're not, and then you're blocked, and then, you know, and well, why? What have I done? And I just used to say to him, well, look, why don't you just come off it? What you're seeing on there, Matthew, I used to say to him, is a totally false world. But he just thought everybody was having a great time. Everybody's having, you know, partying. And because he felt so isolated and so lonely and so not that world is something that I can't be a part of. And I used to always say to him, but you can, but you've got to work at it. We've got to work at it. We've got to get the right help. We've got to get the support. I don't know. I think that maybe, you know, the rejection carried on online maybe. And it was just, you know, Matthew trying to get virtual friends, because it was difficult for him to have friends, proper socialising with people and going out and doing all the things that we would do at his age.
When did you start to realise that his online behaviour was unusual?
Well, I get people saying, you know, oh, you know, Matthew's, you know, causing a bit of trouble with me and my boyfriend or this, that and the other. And, you know, it was just little things like that, you know, at first. And then, you know, next minute he's in court.
His first court visit was in 2011 when Matthew received a restraining order for hacking and harassing his former classmate, Samantha Boniface. He pretended to be Samantha and started sexting people. Matthew had been diagnosed autistic and also with a learning disability a couple of years before that conviction. Donna thinks he was around 18 at the time.
There was no post-diagnostic follow-up. You know, if you had an illness and you'd just been diagnosed with something, you would be followed up, told what this illness means to you. But we didn't have anything. He didn't understand it. I didn't understand it. I had to do all my own research and find out as much as I could to try and think, well, why is this behaviour? I was just crying out for help, just to like get somebody to come and help, you know, help me, help him to have a life where he felt integrated, where he felt included and involved.
Matthew did go on to receive some support from the authorities. He had a succession of social workers. Donna says some were okay, but she felt that most were pretty useless. And he also began working with a specialist forensic support worker in 2013 after his second stalking conviction. Donna says the support worker seemed engaged and genuinely wanted to help Matthew, but for whatever reason, he couldn't get through to him, and she thinks the support ended after a year. Donna's his mum, and I can see how much she cares for him. But things got really difficult between them after Matthew finished college. Donna was aware that Matthew was causing a lot of trouble online.
There was a bit of problems with him, disruption, that the house was getting, you know, we were arguing all the time. I didn't know he was...
You were arguing about the phones and the social media.
Arguing about things like that. I was doing my absolute best. I'd go and get phones off him. I'd say, no, I'd take it in the garage, get the hammer to it. I would, because I was just so... You know, I just couldn't cope. And we just had this big, you've got to go. And then I thought, he'll be back in later on. But he wasn't.
Aged 18, Matthew moves into his own flat alone.
And I just remember walking into this place and thinking, I'm broke down in tears. And at the time, I should have just think, just taken him home. But I say to him now, I should have brought you back. And he said, but he probably wouldn't have come because he'd got what he thought was his independence, but it wasn't, because I was helping him with his bills, his finances, all that kind of thing. But because he became more and more and more and more isolated, apart from when he saw us, he just went within himself even further. And if I could just turn back the clock and get, let's get you back home, let's get this sorted. But it didn't happen like that.
Where did you try to go and get help, and what did they say to you?
I went to psychiatrists, I went to the GPs, I was with social services. I'd even say to the police, can you not just probably say, right, randomly, I'm just going to call around any time, night or day, and check your phone. Oh, no, we can't do that. No, but you'll come and arrest him, lock him up for a few hours, then let him go. Surely, let's have some kind of deterrent. And then alongside that, let's have some help here. Let's get to the bottom of this. I've always wanted a total internet ban, but you know what? Oh, no, that's taken away his civil liberties. We're living in this technological age where you can't do that. Well, hang on a minute. Yes, I can. Because if that means keeping my son and other people safe, and that where he's ended up, to save him from that, there was so much more that could have been done. I was just hitting a dead end all the time. I'd get so far and think, oh, yeah, this is really great. Then the door closes.
Eventually, one of those doors opened and Donna felt that she was finally getting somewhere with Matthew's support.
It's just the last few months, just before Matthew was sentenced, that we got this fantastic social worker. We just got into this point where, you know, the court case was approaching and all the rest of it. But, you know, supported living was getting put in place for him by that time, you know, where he would be able to live independently, taught skills, how to manage his money. Because this was the problem. I was always saying, I'm not going to be around forever.
But that help was too late. The court case was just around the corner. Donna tried to keep her son out of jail, but she couldn't. She asks herself, all the time, whether there wasn't more she could do. Would anything have gotten through to him? And why? Why did he do it? We'll be back after this.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Social media breeds comparisons, and these comparisons make us feel bad sometimes. I'm not immune to this. I look at other people's Instagrams, their photos, and I don't like how they make me feel. It's just a fleeting moment. It never lasts, and normally it's a sign I need to put my phone away. But I wonder how those feelings hit differently for Matthew. Alone at home, no job, no friends to speak of. Like his bio says, too much time on his hands.
It sounds to me that he was really unhappy and very lonely. And he saw these people on social media that seemed to be living perfect lives. And I wonder whether there was a bit of resentment or jealousy there and a desire to show them that he existed and that he was there as well.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. You know, Matthew has been, you know, dragged through all the news and stuff like that. I think what he's done is infantile. I think it's silly. I think what he's done is cause a lot of problems between family and relationships. But he's not physically harmed anybody. He didn't even realise that it was stalking. To Matthew, stalking is going and sitting outside somebody's house, hiding behind corners. And to me, that's probably what I thought as well.
Do you think that the mental harm that can be caused from online stalking can be as damaging as being physically stalked or physically hurt?
I've said to Matthew, you know, what you don't understand is that that person doesn't know what you're going to do next. For you, you're just sat in your flat having causing a bit of trouble between friends, family. And all right, it might have been a lot and it's caused a lot of upset. And so I have said to him, the problem we've got with this is that they didn't know what you were going to do next, so they became fearful. I just think he just got into such a rut that he couldn't break the cycle of it. It's like somebody's either likes what, you know, looking at trains every day, coming into the station, taking the numbers, or planes, or whatever their special interests might be. For Matthew, it was just winding people up.
There would be some people who might listen to this podcast and say, I have Asperger's, I have autism, or I have a loved one that has Asperger's and autism, and they don't behave like this to people. And perhaps Matthew should be punished for what he's done to these women. What would you say to those people?
I agree. I've never thought that, you know, nobody should go unpunished for something that if you've harmed somebody else. But it's if a person's being punished because they, to me, it's like being punished again and again and again. Matthew's been punished because he's autistic.
And do you think he's being punished because he's autistic, or do you think he's being punished because of what he's done?
I think it's because they don't know what to do and because the resources aren't there.
The way Donna sees it, social media, which she doesn't use, has made everything worse for Matthew.
It doesn't matter that it's because he's my son. This is my opinion and this is my view. For anybody, then, you know, that I do have my opinions on social media, have my opinions of people that use social media in certain ways. You've got to be careful what you put out there, what you show, what you share. We've got to take some responsibility. There's so much of it. So much toxic stuff out there. If I had a daughter, would I be encouraging her to go and post pictures of herself in a bra and underpants? No, I don't think I would. Because it's there forever. Just keep some things to yourself. Keep some of your personal life personal. I don't mean anything like that's related to Matthew here, but I just in general terms, I do think that if you're going to lay your life out on social media, then be prepared for backlash.
I guess the thing is, a lot of people would say, I should be able to live my life however I want to live my life on social media, and if I want to pose in my bra and my knickers, then I should be able to do that, and I don't deserve to get backlash or hatred. So I guess what I'm saying to you is, why should they take responsibility for the negative reactions of others? Because really, shouldn't it be on those people to change how they think and they behave towards those women?
But we don't live in a perfect world, do we? We don't live in a perfect world, and that's just human nature sometimes.
Do you think that some of the women in the court case, or that Matthew did this to, do you think they should take responsibility for what they were putting out there on social media?
I don't necessarily want to just pick them out. I just mean everybody. We all do. Just keep a little bit back.
Sitting there, talking to Donna, with the baby photos on the table in between us, I struggle to reconcile the person she's been describing to me all afternoon with what I've heard from the victims. Donna describes a person who doesn't understand what he's doing or know that it's wrong. It also makes me think of what PC Kevin Anderson told me about how Matthew threw his phone out of the window in August 2019 when he was arrested by Cheshire Police.
It sounds to me like you've almost described a person who is very gentle and loving and basically completely harmless, is what I'm hearing from you. It's really hard to reconcile that with the knowledge that I have, if I'm going to be honest with you, of some of the stuff that he did and he wrote. I've seen messages that he sent to people that are really frightening and scary. You know, like, I'm going to get you. No one's ever going to stop me. You know, like calling some of them a lot, and really creating a lot of suffering.
But isn't that the sort of thing that gets said online every single day? I mean, I haven't been on social media for a long time. I'm just going on what other people tell me. Oh, God, you should have seen what was put on there, and, you know, and who said this to what, and, oh, my God. So it's out there. It's every day. It's life. It's every day. You want to be involved in that, carry on there. Stay on there. If you don't, come off it.
This is a really common view. I've had it often in my reporting. I'm thinking of when some of Abby's family blamed her for Matthew's stalking by saying she put too much of her life online. Or when Matthew's victims went to the police and the response was sometimes dismissive. Just come off social media if you want it to stop. In addition to blaming Matthew's victims, this advice didn't actually work. Blocking him often seemed to make things worse. And it's hard not to think that this attitude is partly the reason that Matthew's stalking went on for such a long time. But PC Kevin didn't feel that way. So in January 2022, Matthew found himself at Chester Crown Court.
There was quite a lot of people there that day, and I was quite shocked at that because I was there with my partner and we just sat quietly waiting to go into the court. And, you know, there's this cafeteria there and like a day out. people laughing and joking, and the police officer was in there laughing and joking. I don't know how you're supposed to be in that kind of environment. I just thought, is this appropriate?
And those were the women in the court case that were laughing and joking?
Yeah. I just thought everybody would be sort of quite with subdued, you know, and totally unexpected.
I just want to pause for a second here, because, again, this idea that victims are expected to behave in a certain way, I've heard it many times before in other stories I've worked on. It's why people don't believe rape victims who go on to have one-night stands or domestic violence victims who go back to their abusers. But the thing is, and this is what the research says, trauma manifests differently. There is no model victim and no right way to behave.
What did you think of the victim impact statements? Did they leave an impression on you?
They did. You know, they did. Yeah, they did. Don't know quite what to say. It was upsetting. Yeah, it's upsetting to hear it.
How did it feel when you heard that very long sentence?
You know, I couldn't believe it, really. It was, shocking, quite shocking.
And do you feel that the judge took into sufficient consideration Matthew's autism and his learning difficulties?
No, I don't.
Do you think it had hit you before quite how serious it had got? You know, the amount of messages and the degree of harm that was caused to some of these women?
When you say degree of harm, what would you say that harm was? Throwing it back at you now.
Oh, you can throw it right back at me. As you know, I've spoken to some of these women, and they tell me about being on antidepressants for many years as a result of Matthew's messaging and calling. They tell me about crying with fear, serious issues in their families. You know, Matthew trying to break up relationships, Matthew telling people that their partners were cheating on them. And I don't use this word lightly, but really terrorised over a number of years by Matthew. And I wonder whether listening to those victim impact statements, you realised at that point...
I didn't get any of that with the victim impact statements. I didn't hear them say any of that. But don't forget, I was sat there petrified as well, you know. So a lot of it, I was just, you know, I was probably not hearing what. But I find it very difficult to remove myself from the fact that I know he wouldn't have harmed them.
He did harm them, didn't he, mentally?
Yeah, that's what I meant, any kind of physical harm or threatening for him to, you know, to do anything like that.
Did you ever read any of the messages that Matthew was sending to these women? Did you ever look through them?
I think I had, yeah. I think, I'd not really seen anything threatening or anything like that.
If someone was to magic wrap a book right now and it had all the messages that Matthew had sent to the women, would you want to read it?
No, I wouldn't. Because even if it wasn't Matthew or anybody, if it was anybody... What am I going to gain from that?
It might help you to understand, maybe. And
but you're talking to me like now that I don't understand. You're talking to me like I don't understand, and I do understand, you know, because life's full of knocks. Life's full of things that happen to you. So, yeah, I'm not... I do understand, but I don't have to see every written detail of every word to understand. That's what I'm saying, because I get it.
As I sit in Donna's house and watch the images from the CCTV cameras flicker, I realise that Donna has more in common with Matthew's victims than I first thought.
I noticed that you have security cameras.
Yeah, we put them in because we had damage done to our property because somebody put something online about Matthew. And Matthew hasn't lived here for 12 years, but didn't stop them from coming round and doing, you know, damage to the property and to our vehicles and stuff like that when we had been away on holiday, because the neighbour had walked past and seen the windows smashed. I know what it's like to be terrorised. I do know what it's like to be terrorised because I've been there and I've been on the receiving end of it. When my partner's not here, well, I don't go to bed. I sleep downstairs.
Do you sleep downstairs because you're too scared to go to bed when he's not here?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know one time one person was arrested because he was threatening to burn the house down. So when you're telling me, when you're talking to me about this thing, I feel like I do know.
You have empathy for them. You understand what that's like.
I do. But it's difficult because we're all different and we all handle things differently.
Do you feel that Matthew is a victim in all of this, and how so?
He is as much... He is part of it. He is part, you know... He didn't ask to be born with autism. He didn't... I think we're all partly victims in this. We've all suffered.
I think you definitely seem to have suffered in this, Donna.
But I don't want to be a victim. I just want things to be different. I want things to be, you know, better for all of us, for everybody.
Donna, you didn't need to meet me and talk to me, and I'm really grateful that you did. So thank you.
I was so reluctant to come and for you to come and do this. I hope I haven't upset anybody. I hope I haven't, you know, I hope I've tried to explain things the best way, the way I feel, the way I think about what's happened. You know, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for any of it. I'm just an ordinary, everyday person just trying to get through life.
We did get in contact with Matthew's dad, but he declined to speak with us. In the final episode, Matthew's in prison, but what happens when he gets out? You've been listening to Can I Tell You a Secret? Episode 6 is ready to listen to straight away. If you need any support around stalking and harassment, you can get in touch with the Susie Lamplew Trust or call the National Stalking Helpline on 0808 802 0300. Further information can be found on The Guardian's podcast page. We'd like to thank the National Autistic Society and Autism Rights Group Highland for all their help and advice on this series. This is a podcast series from The Guardian. It was made by me, Shirin Khaleh. The producer is Lucy Hoff. Original music and sound design is by Axel Coutier. The executive producers are Charlotte Pritchard and India Rackerson. The commissioning editor is Nicole Jackson. If you're following the series, do subscribe and leave us a review. Thanks.
This is The Guardian.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.